I remember looking at Ed White's finger scrapings and the melted goo on the inner hatch surface. He must have pawed frantically trying to get the hatch open, just seconds before he expired from searing hot gases that suffocated him and burned out his lungs.
After reading some of Don Isley's thoughts about the tragedy of Apollo 1, I wanted to learn more about him. So I asked my friend Nick, who I met at university and happens to be Don Isley's grandson, if I could interview his family. Thankfully, he agreed. So I flew over to New York to interview Christy and Andrew Isley.
I'm Christy Isley, and he is my stepfather. My mom married him when I was 5, right after he went up, came back down, and they got married.
And I'm Andrew Isley, and I'm Don Isley's son. He'd always bring the 16mm movie.
Right.
Pretty much every school had like a little projector, so we'd have to get that wheeled in and hooked up. But it was a sort of a little mini documentary about the space flight. And then he would answer questions afterwards. Inevitably, everyone asks, how do you go to space?
How do you go to the bathroom? Space? That was the big,
yeah.
That's the big question every single time. Originally, the NASA didn't want the astronauts to be involved at all. They were just wanted them to like be in the capsule, was my understanding.
Yeah, there were engineers, but the engineers weren't actually flying it. So
right.
All of the astronauts at the time had engineering degrees. They were test pilots. They had some, right. Well, at least, I guess it's the second crop, because it was Walt Cunningham and Dad that had the, I guess, the strong engineering background. And I think they put it to task. They were very much involved with the construction. At least that was my understanding. They were interacting, like, firsthand with engineers in terms of the redesign.
Before that, NASA just didn't want astronauts to to be involved at all.
Well, that was the joke, spam in a can.
Spam in a can? What's that?
That's from the right stuff.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that?
No.
Yeah, they all talked about astronauts and how, like, sending dogs or chimpanzees up. So now you're going to throw a guy in there and it's just spam in a can. Oh. You're not doing anything. It's all right. Controlled from the ground.
Right. That's what NASA wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was a lot of animosity there between NASA and astronauts. He was supposed to be on Apollo 1.
Yeah.
Yep. He hurt his shoulder.
Yeah. I think he felt really bad about that. Like, I think he carried some guilt around about that.
I'm your host, Matthew Gorichkovsky, and you're listening to Apollo 7, The Forgotten Mission.
Back in those days, fighter pilots knew that in their business, you might die tomorrow and never even have thought about it, and you were up flying. I've come close on a number of occasions. Now that crew died, and we're trying to fix the spacecraft so another crew wouldn't die in that spacecraft, they became a whole lot more open-minded.
Immediately after the Apollo 1 fire, astronauts and engineers were going toe-to-toe with one another, working towards making the spacecraft as safe as possible. The astronauts, with a newfound distrust in NASA engineers and administration, worked tirelessly close to the spacecraft, making sure every little bit of detail was accounted for.
The President of the United States had stuck his neck out on, we're going to beat the Russians to the moon. And 21 months later, we launched that spacecraft.
4, 3, 2, we have ignition. Commit liftoff. We have liftoff.
What a sight. What a view. I could see the most spectacular view of the whole Atlantic Ocean, hundreds and hundreds of miles of it, all deep blue and shimmering in the reflected sunlight of the noonday sun, with little patches of white puffy clouds dotting it here and there. And in the distance, toward the horizon, the blue gave way to a sort of faint purplish haze in the atmosphere. The sky above the far horizon was black as coal. It was just beautiful. I'd never seen anything like it, but then of course, I'd never been this high before. I said something marvelously memorable, like, boy, what a view.
When we finally got to fly, Don and I were very enthusiastic. Wally was pretty enthusiastic.
I was bored to tears up there for 11 days. I mean bored. Fighter pilots like to fly for an hour, hour and a half, come back and do something else. Maybe 2 flights a day, 3 flights a day, and you go to the bar. Unless you have a flight the next day, then you don't go to the bar. And to sit up there for 11 days, Oh, that was so bad. Remember those little bands you'd wear around your wristwatch for the calendar? I have that band in a plastic block with 8 of the 11 days scratched off like a prisoner.
Remember that 16mm movie Don Isley's son, Andrew, talked about? It's a compilation of the filming they did during their 11 days in space. One good way of getting public support and financial support from Congress was to broadcast what life was like living in a spacecraft. This had never been done before. And so, the Wally Walt and Don Show was created. For the very first time, the public was able to watch astronauts float around in space and participate in a Q&A as they orbited the Earth. They were the first to show that to the world. They were also the first to get sick in space.
One thing that is truly unique about Apollo 7 is that we were the first crew where they had a cold on board. Wally Schirra had a cold, and I never had a cold at all. Isley maybe coughed once or twice the first day, but he never had a cold either. But we were all taking the pills because Wally was in charge. He's an old-fashioned military guy. His father was an admiral. His grandfather was an admiral. And Wally was a captain. And by God, he was going to be like his dad and his granddad out there. What the public doesn't know, what's interesting is, you know, how do we end up with a cold in the first place on board? Well, we launched, I think it was a Friday. The preceding weekend, we had already had to stay down at the Cape. And we went bird hunting, and it was cold weekend and wet weekend, and we were out there, and we found out later that, we went 2 days before the season had even opened, so we were really in trouble on some of that. But it was cold, wet, heading back. We knew there was some concern about a cold, and I can remember that I went off with a friend. We didn't go to NASA doctors. We went someplace else and got some doctor to give us a cold pills or the shot or whatever hell it was. And I think Isley may have done that too. Wally?
Nah.
He didn't. It was typical Wally. He didn't do that. So, and we all seemed to be okay until we got in orbit. We got in orbit. Wally immediately was coughing and not feeling good with the blowing his nose effect. You talk about things going on board. Nobody even aware of these kind of things. We had a limited amount of little Kleenex. I don't even know if they called it Kleenex at the time, but what we had, a limited amount of it. And the first disagreement we had was when Isley and I started leaning on Wally, because Wally would take one of those Kleenexes and go and throw it away and then use another Kleenex. And Don and I started pointing out, we said, hey, you can't do that. We've only got a very little bit left here. We were concerned about making the full 11 days. Wally was not. He never had been in the preceding two missions either. He wanted to get most of what he could do and go home, basically what it was. And we had a limited amount of meds around the spacecraft. And Wally said, okay, you guys take a pill too. Because he was talking to the ground, and he told the ground, we've got a cold. We got colds. I don't think we had the balls enough to tell him. So, no, we don't have a cold, because it would have been just a conflict, you know, with Wally. And they were having that anyway.
The cold made us a little short, but I was short before we took off. In a meeting at Downey, walked into an open door meeting, dark room. They were discussing the couches that we would fly in this Block 2 spacecraft that were going to be Block 1 couches. And I said, oh, what does that mean? They all turned, oh, hi, Wally. Well, we can't get the Block 2 couches ready in time. I said, what's the difference? Well, the Block 1 really can't take a landing. Oh, have a new mission rule then, don't we? What's that? We don't launch if the wind's going to blow us back over the beach. I guess that's a good mission rule. Guess what? We launched, and the wind was going to blow us back over the beach. So someone broke that rule. I didn't. I was compromised. Again, it was a case of a little go fever, not as bad as the real bad cases of go fever, but it was enough to make me annoyed, and that's bad form. We launched on a Friday. I remember this very specifically. In orbit, our so-called Friday night, Don Isley's on watch, and Cunningham and I are supposed to be sleeping. And I hear Don saying, Wally won't like that. What was that? Put on my mic and listen in. Oh, I'm supposed to put on the television tomorrow morning. Well, we didn't have that in the schedule, gentlemen. That doesn't go on until Sunday morning. I should have said, I don't want to interrupt Howdy Doody. That would have gotten away with it. But I really was saying, we have not checked this system out. It's in the flight plan to be checked at this point in time. We'll check it at that point in time. We did. We did the Wally Walton Don Show Sunday. But by then, Everybody said, these guys are getting testy up there. They're not going along with the flight controllers. I have yet to meet a flight controller that ever died falling out of a chair like this. That was my whole attitude from then on. Don't mess with me, guys. This is my command, and I wasn't kidding. And I'll take all the advice, all the information you can give me, but don't push us around. We're still worried about whether this is a safe spacecraft or not. We hadn't even got to a point where they're going to shave all our hair off in case there was a fire. Now, why am I going to start running a TV show for somebody if I haven't checked the camera out? All electrical circuits, piece by piece. Uh-huh, it works. Now I'll show you TV. Oddly enough, we got an Emmy for that Wally Walton Don show. So I can't really say it was a bad deal.
When it was time to come down, Wally Schirra had an understandable concern. They were asked to put on their space suits and also put on their pressurized space helmets. At that point, if they're coming down through the atmosphere and his head cold blocks his ears, he would not be able to reach his hand up like we all do and just blow and equalize the pressure in his ears. He was worried he was going to rupture an eardrum doing that. It's understandable. NASA, however, this is the very first Apollo mission. They want to play it by the book, and they say the rules say you put your helmets on. For the first time, really, in the space program, the commander of the spacecraft said, I actually think I've got the right idea here. I'm actually not going to do what you're advising. I'm going to do this my own way. This conversation went back and forward in the last couple of days of the mission. Wally Schirra, in the end, decided not to put his spacecraft helmet on. His crew members followed that. They came down. Everything was fine. And in subsequent missions, like Apollo 11, they came back without space helmets on. It turned out not to be necessary. However, that did cause a little bit of friction, and once again, the crew was seen as being a little bit insubordinate.
Wally Schirra was in charge of this mission. Don and Walt had no other options besides following his orders. Rumors of a mutiny were floating around. They needed to prove that this spacecraft can last long enough in space to make it to the moon and back. And even with all the sickness, tension, and frustration, they were able to successfully complete their mission.
In retrospect, during Apollo 7, we were busy all the time. It's the longest, the most ambitious, the most successful first test flight of any new flying machine ever.
A huge thank you to our interviewees, Walter Cunningham, Francis French, Christy Isley, Andrew Isley, and our Don Isley narrator, David Kaufman. This podcast is produced and edited by me, Matthew Goryczkowski. Original music composed by Jamie Bangan. Our sound recordists are Christian Black, Philip Long, Nancy Nguyen, and Matthew Crouchley. Our co-sound mixer is Daniel Mammon. Special thank you to University of California Irvine's digital filmmaking faculty, Ulysses Jenkins, Brian Jackson, and Bruce Yanemoto, and to my friends and family, Nick Levy, David Toledo, Enrique Aceves, Gabriel Campos, Cameron Baluch, Sam Vedernikov, Yefim Vedernikov, Aaron Goryczkowski, and Nadia Malamud. This production was made in collaboration with the University of California Irvine Digital Filmmaking Program. Excerpts were taken from the autobiography Apollo Pilot, The Memoir of Astronaut Don Isley, edited by Francis French, and can be bought on Amazon for those that are interested. The 1998 interview done with Wally Schirra was conducted by NASA's Oral History Program at the NASA Johnson Space Center. In addition, we will be uploading all full-length interviews to our YouTube channel, Apollo 7, The Forgotten Mission, made possible by our cinematographer Corey Nguyen and camera operators Philip Long and Christian Black. Check it out if you're interested in listening to the complete interviews. As a reminder, all episodes are currently published and available for you to enjoy. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.